All righty, good evening all. This is the Frank Report. I'm your host, Francis Steffen. You're listening right here on American Voice Radio Network. Go to theamericanvoice.com or americanvoiceradio.com. And those are the websites. You can find out pretty much everything you need to know about this network, how to listen to any one of the six streams that rate all the way from 8K all the way up to 64K. Hey, you might say 8K. Who the heck would want to listen to that? Well, hey, if you're on your mobile device and you're running out of minutes or you're running out of data time on your deal, you might want to listen to 8K so you can spare your data. That's why that's still there and the sound ain't bad. But everybody's got different situations, so we try to cater to as much as we can. So we go all the way from 8K to 64K, depending on what kind of connection you've got. That depends on which one's the best for you. If you've got a mobile device, we also have applications on the website that you can download and install so you can listen to AVR on the go. Even if you've got an old cell phone, one of those old flip phones that doesn't have any of the smart capabilities, virtual radio is on our site that you can go there. We're hooked up with them. That is an, they didn't call it an application, but it's like an application for older cell phones to give them the capacity to listen to internet radio. Plus, we've got the phone bridge for you folks living in the cave that have nothing but a telephone as technology. You can still listen to AVR. All you got to do is dial in to the phone bridge. And, of course, we have KU Band Satellite, which serves all of North America. Lots of stuff on the KU, including, of course, American Voice Radio Network. Comes in crystal clear. It's a real good alternative thing to have in your arsenal of information, okay, ways to get information. Anyhow, it is the 6th, the day before Pearl Harbor Day. Oh, we're going to have some fun with that tomorrow. It's Thursday. Now, I told you for most of the week that we're going to have a guest tonight. We do. We've got Max Egan, who is a longtime AVR host who does Surviving the Matrix right here on American Voice Radio Network. You can listen Friday nights. Check the schedule, folks. And, well, I'll stop yammering. And we'll just bring Max on. Welcome, Max.
Hey, Frank. Nice to be on the show, brother. It's good to actually finally come on and talk to you.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. And, you know, I should have had you on long ago, but I just never really thought of it until you started telling me about you, as AVR listeners probably know, you took a little, let's call it a vacation, and you took a little trip. And I say little jokingly because this was a big trip, and you got to go some amazing places. And I'd like you to come on and tell, you know, the listeners about it. Cause, you know, the fact of the matter is a lot of us, you know, we do our things and we have our experiences and, you know, but we do what we do. And then we listen to other people who have done other things and we kind of live a little vicariously through them. And I think we all do that with each other, you know, to a certain degree. You just had an opportunity to take quite a trip, and I'd like you to share some of that with me and the listeners.
Well, I actually got an offer to go to Peru for a couple of weeks, which was quite remarkable in itself. There's a whole series of synchronicities which led to that. It was like a, you know, free trip, 2 weeks in Peru. I thought, okay, I'll do this. I happened to mention it on air, and because that happened, I started getting offered trips to other places by other people. And the 2 week trip to Peru ended up going to Costa Rica and across to Europe and ended up in England and across to Ireland and down to Croatia and into Egypt and ended up actually going into Gaza, which was amazing. And that was really a highlight of the trip to me, going into Gaza, because it was just so surreal being there. But it all started with this 2 week journey to Peru, which came kind of out of the blue. And led to this whole series of events, which was amazing.
Well, let me ask you, Max, when you first started on this trip, you kind of knew once you started basically where you were going to be going. And for one, how much of that from when you actually got on the first plane and said, okay, I'm off on my trip, how much changed as far as where you thought, where you actually went, where you thought you were going? And where, when you first left, where did you think was going to be the highlight? I mean, did you think, oh yeah, Gaza's going to be it? Or did you think somewhere else and then it just turned out that no, this was the highlight?
Well, yeah, the trip to Gaza was tentative all the time. I mean, there was never any guarantee that I was going to get to Gaza. The whole idea was to go to Peru, and then I got invited to go and speak at the World Hemp Congress in Slovenia, and that kind of got arranged. And because I was there, I thought, well, if I'm in Slovenia, I mean, I'm from Australia, so I mean, you know, I thought if I'm in Slovenia, then it's only a hop, skip, and a jump to England. And if I go to England, well, there's a friend of mine called Ken O'Keefe who lives in England. And Ken O'Keefe was on the Mavi Mama. He's got the key to the city of Gaza. He's you know, he's done some pretty amazing things as far as freedom for Palestine and all this sort of stuff. So I thought, just because I'm going to England to see Ken, then there's a chance that I might go to Gaza. So it was always in my mind to go there, but it was always tentative because you don't just sort of decide to go to Gaza one day. It's
yeah, a travel agent might give you a funny look if you said, I'm looking for a vacation trip to Gaza.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's, you don't go there. They don't let tourists in. I mean, you've got to have a reason to go there, and there's a certain process you have to go through to get into Gaza. So it was always tentative. So, I mean, when I left here, there was all sorts of possibilities on the table. There was a possibility of Hawaii. There was a possibility of LA. There was a possibility of all sorts of things, but I didn't really know where it was going to go after Slovenia. I mean, I knew I was going to go from Peru to Costa Rica. I worked that out about a week or two before I left, that's what was going to happen. I was going to go to Costa Rica from Peru, and from there we were going to go to Slovenia. But that ended up detouring through Spain and Portugal, and all sorts of stuff happened there. And then it worked out that, yes, because I'm so close to England, I can go there, and we can just see what happens while I'm in England. But it worked out that we did. We did get down there and get into Gaza, which was quite remarkable in itself.
Well, now, when you went to Spain, because Spain's been in the news quite a bit for their financial troubles, when you were in Spain, you know, from being their eyewitness, how bad is their economic system, situation?
Well, look, I wasn't long enough to really experience it from an economic perspective. I mean, it was just a very, very brief stay in Spain. But so, and I wasn't really looking at the economies of the places as I was going through. It was more of the mood of the people, you know, the overall feeling of the people.
How was that in Spain?
Well, I found that all through Europe, there's a real apprehension in the people. There's a lot of strength in the people, but the whole European region, this has suffered literally centuries of war, you know, so they're always kind of looking over their shoulder, expecting a financial crash, or they're expecting an invasion from another country nearby, or they're just expecting a war to break out at any moment. They're expecting their government to do any number of things. I mean, anything's possible. Because this is what Europe has been. It's always been this very unstable area that's been at war with itself so often throughout history, literally for centuries and centuries. So you've got a people there that have got all of this really, really oppressive stuff, this oppressive history to deal with. It's kind of like a scar on their psyche a little bit. You know, they're very, very good people, but they've got this apprehension about them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and for good reason. I mean, because it's not just war. They've had many economic catastrophes, you know, or collapses, whichever way you want to look at them. I mean, technically a collapse, but I mean, if you're a family, it's a catastrophe for a lot of people, and they've gone through many of those.
They have economically, but all the Dark Ages, the Spanish Inquisition, I mean, you know, this just goes way back. It's right through history. The whole history of warfare is virtually based in Europe, you know.
And that is so, so opposite of the psyche of Americans.
Oh, it is.
Because nothing bad's ever happened to us. We just, you know, other people have problems and we go and get involved. And then, of course, sometimes, you know, we end up with problems too, but they're not really our problems. They're problems that we've involved ourselves with other people. And, you know, hey, it's debatable. Should we, shouldn't we, you know, people have their opinions. Mine is, you know, we'd probably be better off minding our own business, but Americans have this, it's something you hear a lot in America. And I don't know if it's the same in Australia, but, oh, that could never happen here sort of attitude, where I guess the Europeans have an attitude, well, if it's going to happen anywhere, it'll probably happen here.
Yeah, well, it's interesting the way it's all done, really, because both in England and America, they kind of export their wars. I mean, they don't fight wars on their own ground. They'll go and have a war somewhere else, someone else's ground, you know. And they'll call it fighting for freedom. Oh, we're going to bring democracy to this place. Really, you're just meddling in someone else's affairs. And what we call democracy may not really be the best form of government. I mean, when you look at what the Western governments have done to the rest of the world, I mean, the Third World was virtually created by the West. So, we haven't exactly been friendly to these people. And we sort of go off and meddle in all their affairs. But what the people of America and the people of a lot of countries don't realize is that they are involved in what goes on overseas. They do need to pay attention, and especially to situations like what is going on between Israel and Gaza, because what I experienced in Gaza while I was there was basically a dispossessed people. What I experienced was a system of essentially warehousing surplus human beings, because there's been a situation created in the Gaza-Palestinian relationship whereby Israel seems to be free to take as much land as it likes, and the Palestinian people whom it dispossesses through its colonization programs, these become surplus human beings, and they get warehoused. And we're seeing a workable model being created here that can be used for the rest of the world. Now, as we see things like carbon tax, which has been introduced to Australia here, and we've seen our electricity bills virtually triple in the last year because of carbon tax. And you're going to see this in America. You're going to see this in other countries. You're going to see the price of general living to be, just so expensive that living is going to outprice itself. So you're going to see all these surplus human beings getting created throughout our societies. I mean, you've got it now in America. You've got countless homeless people in America, and you've got all these empty homes, all these unoccupied homes, and all these homeless people. So you're seeing these surplus human beings being created. And what Israel and Gaza are showing us is a method of warehousing these human beings. So this is what's going on. And eventually what we're going to see, if we don't pay attention to what's going on over there, this is a microcosm of the macrocosm. We're going to see a world that is divided into two sections, and one section will be rich and lush like Israel, which will be the section that the elites and the ruling classes and the land that they hold will be like that, and the rest of the world will look like Gaza. And we'll see virtually a global Palestine if we don't pay attention to the situation over there. That's what we're seeing. So it does affect everybody, and it is very, very relative to what's going on in America right now.
Well, and you know what strikes me is a lot of people will call that, well, it's the New World Order, and that's an okay catchphrase and all that, but it's not really new, because this setup of the elite and the serfs, or the elite and the slaves, the king and the servants, whatever way you want to categorize it, two classes, rich and poor, is the Dark Ages.
Well, yeah, it is, and that's what we're heading for. But we're seeing the system is now getting to a stage where it's refining itself, and it only needs the amount of people that it needs to function efficiently as a system. And all the rest of humanity is expendable. And that's what we're seeing. And, you know, and through the whole agenda, I mean, you could really, really look at this and go right deep into it and start looking at, subjects such as transhumanism and see where they're really going with it. I mean, what they're doing ultimately is they're genetically modifying everything that's left. And they're changing all life on the planet through the chemtrails and through the GM foods and the toxins and everything. I mean, if you really, really step back and look at what's going on here, you're seeing the genetic modification and transmutation of absolutely all life on this planet.
And, yeah, absolutely.
It's a control grid that's being put in place. That it's a biological electromagnetic control grid. It's something that's straight out of the realms of the Twilight Zone that's being put in place. And they only need enough people to have it run efficiently. That's all they need. So that's why everybody is becoming expendable, and they're developing these systems for surplusing and warehousing of human beings, such as we see in Gaza.
Now in Gaza, are they, cause here in America, like you mentioned, we have and have had for a long time, a large, maybe not in the big picture of the American population. Of course, it's gotten a lot bigger, but, a large homeless population. And they are basically expendable, disposable, invisible people. But here in America, they also have a lot of propaganda. I mean, it's gone almost beyond propaganda to straight up mind control. And I'm just wondering, in Gaza, are the Israelis bothering with any of that, or are they just bringing the hammer down?
Well, they don't control anything in Gaza. The Israelis have no control over Gaza at all. Gaza is simply an area of land 5 miles wide, 25 miles long, which is essentially the world's largest open-air prison. It's basically a concentration camp. It's blockaded from land and sea. All the borders are closed. You can't go out further than 3 miles offshore. There's Israeli gunboats out there. It's been besieged, basically, since 2006 or 2008.
It sounds very much like the Polish ghettos.
Well, yeah, and you've got a population of 1.6 million people that live in this area. Over 800,000 of them are children. Of the adults, half of them are women. So essentially you've got 1.2 million women and children living in this area. And wow. Israel, has besieged it basically because the people voted for a government that wasn't going to allow the total control that Israel had over the place. They voted for change. I seem to recall the American people recently voting for change. But, Hamas promised them that, okay, well, we're going to get rid of all these Israeli checkpoints through town, and we're going to give you better health care. We're going to give you, all the things that government promised, all the stuff that they do. So, the people voted for Hamas. And then what we hear, if you look at any story about how Gaza, the siege happened, you'll see that even the mainstream media will tell you that Hamas violently seized control of the strip in 2006. But what actually happened was the people voted for Hamas, and Fatah, who were in control, violently attempted to retain control. And so Hamas had to use force in order to oust Fatah from power and claim the position that they'd been voted into. Okay, so that's why there was that little bit of a civil scuffle while it all happened. It wasn't Hamas seizing control violently. It was
so fatal. it would be kind of like if let's just say things went different in America and the American people somehow got their vote counted and Mitt Romney won and Obama refused to leave.
Exactly. It was exactly like that. And so that's what they did. And so, of course, but once Hamas got in, well, perhaps they weren't exactly what the people would have liked either. I mean,
we know how that is in America.
Yeah, we'll see. So, and then suddenly the world goes, oh, look, they voted in a terrorist government, so we're going to punish the people. Well, the first thing Hamas did was they closed the electoral office and said, okay, well, now we're in, we don't need elections anymore. So they closed the electoral office straight away. And then Israel basically besieged the place. But they got rid of all the checkpoints. In the West Bank in Palestine, if you go to the West Bank, which is under control of Fatah, you find that in an area which is about the size of Sydney Western suburbs, I mean, I don't know, maybe Manhattan or something like that, maybe a bit bigger, there's 500 Israeli checkpoints,
Wow.
So how are you supposed to operate in a situation like that? It takes up to 6 hours to get through these checkpoints. You might just need to go shopping. They have pregnant women trying to get through the checkpoints. They're in labor, and they won't let them through. They end up giving birth on the side of the road because the guards won't let them through the checkpoints to get to the hospital. And this is the situation in the West Bank, and that's what it used to be like in Gaza. So the people voted for change. I mean, wouldn't you? you know.
Sure.
And so that because they did, they besieged this whole place. And, you know, now it's just, they're just surplus human beings. And the problem is that, the situation there is that it's a two-tiered legal system that Israel has. That's how they have their stranglehold over this place. And, it's a very delicate situation, and it's basically an apartheid system, and the world needs to pay attention. So I really wanted to go over there as well and to have a look and to see and to meet the Palestinian people, to meet the people in Gaza, to see what they're really like. Because we get these pictures of Islamic Jihad with machine guns and all these terrorists that live there. All they do is sit there behind these walls and build rockets to bomb Israel. I mean, that's basically.
Well, we have American generals lying to us on the TV saying, oh yes, well, you know, these people, of course he was talking about Libyans, but they're no different than anybody else. These people, they come to, outdoor meetings with rocket launchers. That's just what they do. They just always come. And that's just not true. So we get this picture painted for us that these people just walk around with rocket launchers and they're always ready to just kill somebody at a moment's notice. And, you know, people get this in their head going, oh, those poor Israelis, you know, they have these monsters living there just ready to just pounce on them and kill them. And, oh my gosh, you know, And none of it is necessarily true.
Well, that's the thing. It's not. It's not true at all. I mean, that's what I found when I got there was a wonderful, wonderful, genuine people. Really, really friendly, really supportive, very kind, generous people. Very honest, very down to earth, who are trying to hold out with the last little bit they've got of their nation. Now, even when you look at the formation of Israel with the 1948 boundaries, if you want to accept that as being valid or legal, you know, perhaps you do. Okay, it was done by the United Nations, so let's, for argument's sake, accept it as valid. There goes the creation of Israel. There it is. It's created. It's got these boundaries. That's Israel. The rest of it is Palestine, so that these people still have a country. What's happened is that's all been encroached upon to the fact that the stage now that it's virtually gone. Palestine is virtually gone, and if it continues at its current rate, another 10 years or 15 years, there will be no Palestine, and the entire race of Palestinians will be dispossessed. The entire, they'll all be dispossessed. And, well, and so, and, you know, we've got to pay attention here to what's going on.
And that's one of the things that, you know, to say that, I mean, there's people that come on the radio and they, there is never a nation of Palestine. Well, I can just simply, you know, the internet's great for that. I mean, you can just go on there. I mean, I heard someone say that, and I said, oh, man, So I went online, and it took me all but, like, 3 minutes just to type in map of Palestine pre-1940. So I'm looking at all these maps from the 20s and 30s, and they all have Palestine right there. So people will say, oh, Palestine didn't even exist. Of course it did. It was on every map published before, you know, in the 40s and 30s and 20s and forever. I mean, it was called Palestine, and therefore, you know, other people, well, there was no Palestinian people. Well, gee, you know, anybody who lives in a place called Palestine would be Palestinian. So it's just a ridiculous argument that they keep making, and they try to, you know, which is an old tactic, is to dehumanize your enemy so that it doesn't matter to anybody what you actually do to them.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what they've done, and they treat them in a terrible way. I mean, like I said, they've got a two-tiered legal system for even the people that live within Israel. I mean, a lot of Palestinian refugees live within Israel simply because Israel has annexed so much of Palestine now. And these people are actually treated like second-class citizens because of the introduction of a law which was called the Law of Return, which was a law which granted Jewish nationality to Jews that returned to Israel. So you can have Israeli citizenship, but you don't have Israeli nationality. You only have Jewish nationality. You see what I'm saying? So it's racial discrimination against the indigenous Palestinian people who became citizens of the state of Israel. You see, and it was like formalized and institutionalized by the of that law, which is the law of Jewish nationality, which is distinct from Israeli citizenship, right? Like no Israeli nationality exists within Egypt, and the Supreme Court doesn't even recognize an Israeli nationality. They only recognize Jewish nationality. So that immediately creates a two-tier legal system, which creates an apartheid system whereby Palestinians are seen as second-class people. You know?
Well, it seems to me that they've taken a concept done here in the United States with the slaves, with the 14th Amendment versus, you know, your citizenship based on you are a citizen of one of the states of the Union, which gives you, you know, you are now a United States citizen, meaning United States plural citizen. And then, you know, with the freed slaves, they came up with the 14th Amendment citizenship, which now you are a United States citizen, not by virtue of, you know, you are a citizen of one of the states of the Union. You are now some different kind of citizen, which does not have the same rights. I mean, if you read the 14th Amendment and you read the Bill of Rights, you know, the Bill of Rights applies to the people that are citizens by virtue of being citizens of the states, versus the rights put in or privileges put into the 14th Amendment, which applies to the people who are 14th Amendment citizens, which is a two-tiered system also. They just taken it and replaced, you know, Jewish with Israel and made it, okay, here you go, we have this, you can be a citizen, but you can't be, you know, unless you're a Jew, you can't really be a citizen.
Well, you can be a citizen, but you have no rights because you have no nationality.
I see.
You see what I'm saying? You can't be of Israeli nationality. You can be of Jewish nationality and an Israeli citizen. But Israeli citizenship does not grant you national status, does not grant you nationality, and it is with nationality that comes your inherent human rights. Right?
So that's
the way they've got it structured. So the Palestinians have no rights because they don't have a nationality. So they're dispossessed people. They're surplus people. You know what I'm saying? They're just Israeli citizens. They're surplus Israeli citizens that have no nationality.
Well, this is
actually worse than the apartheid system that was in place in Africa. Right?
It sounds like it. It sounds like it. We've got to take a break, Max, and I want to leave with, you know, to come back on the next side, and I want you to think about something. I've got a question, and it is, what is the biggest lie that the mainstream media is telling the world that you saw that is not true? And I'm sure there's many, but, you know, let's just start with the biggest one. And when we come back, we'll start right there. So everybody stay tuned. We'll be back in about 3 minutes. All righty, we're back. This is the Frank Report. I'm your host, Francis Steffen. You are listening right here on American Voice Radio Network. It is the sixth day of December 2012. It's Thursday night, about 8:42 out here on the Pacific Time Coast. Anyway, welcome back, Max.
Nice to be back, Frank.
Well, I left you with a question. What do you think, from your perspective of being there and eyewitnessing it and getting a chance to talk to the Palestinian people and seeing what's going on with your own eyes, what do you feel is the biggest, and I'm sure there's many, but the biggest lie that the major media is presenting to the rest of the world about the situation in Gaza?
The biggest lie is that the concept that Gaza is a hotbed of Iranian terrorism, that it's supported by Iran for weapons and all this sort of stuff, and that the people of Gaza are in any way a threat to anybody. That is a complete lie.
Wow, that's a pretty big lie, because, I mean, people are under the belief that, you know, somehow Iran is supplying these people with all kinds of weapons and all kinds of money and all kinds of ideas about wiping Israel off the face of the earth. And this is what we're hearing.
Look, Ahmadinejad never even said he wanted to wipe Israel off the face of the earth. That's a misquote. He never ever said that. He said he wanted to wipe Zionism off the face of the earth. And what is Zionism? Zionism is the belief, basically, that Palestine should become Israel. That's what Zionism is all about. It's about creating the Israeli state in Palestine and basically replacing Palestine with the Israeli state. That's what it's all about, and that's what he said. And what we've got, I mean, as I was saying earlier, even if you look at the 1948 boundaries and you see what Israel could be and what Palestine could be, and you see how much of Palestine Israel has stolen since then, you begin to see that the people in Gaza are not terrorists. They're freedom fighters. They're holding out against a force that uses terrorism against them on a daily basis, that has them besieged, that has them in a state where they can't even fix their sewage system. The power's off for 8 to 16 hours a day because they can't get parts to fix the electrical plant. And you go and meet these people, and these are normal, everyday people. I did a video that I put on YouTube recently, a couple of days ago, called Max Egan and Ken O'Keefe, 10 Days in Gaza. Have a look at that video, and you see normal, everyday people. You see university students that are learning English so they can go out and talk to the world and say, hey, look, we're not terrorists. We're just people who want to interact with the rest of the world the way you all do. We just want to have a normal life. We're under this incredible stress every day. And another one of the biggest lies that I've heard about the whole situation is that any type of military action that Israel is engaged in against these people should be called a war, because it is not a war, it's genocide. Because on one side you have Israel, which is virtually the most powerful military force on earth, and on the other side you have a civilian population, over half of which are children, over three quarters of which are women and children, who have no army, no navy, no air force, no ordnance, no tanks, no artillery, no heavy weapons, nothing, no batteries, nothing. All they have are a few homemade rockets that Hamas makes. They power them with fertilizer. They go over the ground and they just fall to the ground like a skyrocket, basically. They put a hole in your window. They don't explode. And in response, you have Israel dropping 500-pound bombs on residential areas. They took out 21 members of one family in one go with one bomb the other day. You had six people die in Israel during the whole conflict. Four of them died of heart attacks. The other two were soldiers who were shot near the border, you know, as they were shooting at Palestinians all the time. While we were in there, there was a rocket landed in northern Gaza. The Palestinians didn't respond. There were three fishermen shot off the coast. We woke up to machine gun fire one morning. There's an Israeli gunboat shooting at fishermen offshore. Now, they didn't respond. Israel breaks the ceasefire at least twice a week. The people were amazed that there was only one rocket attack and three people shot while we were there in our 10 days. They said, we normally get air raids every 3 days. So Israel's constantly lobbing bombs and rockets and just taunting these people into responding. And when they respond, they do what they just did with this 8-day war, and they did that as a response. Hamas threw rockets over into Israel, and so Israel responded with this blistering attack. But the reason Hamas threw these rockets is because Israel had just assassinated a man called Ahmed Jabari, who was the head of Hamas military. He was the most moderate Hamas leader in Gaza, and he was brokering a peace accord that was going to bring about a lasting truce with Israel, was going to recognize the Israeli state and bring about a lasting truce. And this is the person that Israel targeted for assassination. And when Hamas responded, they said, oh dear, we're under attack from Hamas. And they launched the 8-day war, killing 179 innocent Palestinian people.
Sounds to me as though Israel is picking a fight.
Israel is constantly picking a fight. That's all it's doing. There is no war that can be waged against Gaza. It takes two armies to have a war. There is no army in Gaza. There is a civilian population, mostly of children. And Israel dares to call its assault against these people a war. So that is possibly also one of the biggest lies I've ever heard.
Well, you know, I guess that we could, I know we could sit here for hours and talk about the problems here and what's going on and how bad it is, but we're running out of time, and I'm just curious, and I'm going to ask you a question that I don't have any answer for, but what is the solution? What has to be done in this area in order for, you know, these people, all these people, the Israelis and the Palestinians, to just go and have their lives and leave each other alone, if that's what they have to, you know, if they can't get along? How do they get to a point where they can just leave each other alone and live their lives, or get along, or whatever they have to do? How does this end? I mean, how does this stop?
Well, you know, it I don't think it will at the moment, because, I mean, Israel's created a situation through its colonization program. I mean, you know, like I said, if it stuck to the 1948 boundaries, it would have been okay. But through this colonization program, it's created so many refugees and so much disharmony. And there's children in Gaza that have been subject to massacre after massacre after massacre. And it breeds this non-feeling human, you know, because after you've been brutalized so many times, you know, there's some people in Palestine who just can't forgive what Israel's done to them, because they've lost so many family members, they've lost loved ones so many times over, and they've been subject to so much brutality that it's very, very difficult for them to move forward. And that's understandable. But, I mean, what we're seeing here is because of the colonization program of Israel, and even what it's done now since the vote that recognized Palestine as a non-member state, Israel's decided, oh, well, since you're doing that, we're going to knock down more homes and build another 3,000 housing units in East Jerusalem, in occupied territories, which
well,
is
that's what I was
built on. And also, we're going to withhold taxes. We're going to withhold all the taxes that we collected for the Palestinian Authority this month, and we're going to use them to offset the debt to the Israeli power company. So they're saying, oh, look, you know, people don't even question, well, why is Israel collecting the taxes for Palestine? It's, you know, we collect the money and we give you an allowance. Okay, so we're going to you ask for autonomy, you ask for recognition as a normal person. Okay, well, we're going to withhold your allowance and we're going to knock down all your houses and put 3,000 of our houses there. And the world's seeing this, and it's causing the implosion of Israel. See, Israel will implode itself simply due to its aggressive actions. It's causing the self-destruction of the Israeli state. The more it oppresses them, you know.
Here in the United States, now the United Nations has voted, you know, and most of the world is sympathetic to the Palestinian situation. They recognize Israel is wrong in this, regardless of what they feel they're entitled to or whatever. They're not acting right, because what you call colonization is just massacre. You come into someone else's house, kill them all, burn it down, and build your own house. That, to me, isn't colonization. That's murder. And, you know, this is what they do. And the rest of the world is seeing it. But the United States, we are being fed the rest of the world just, the only reason they are seeing this is because they hate us. They hate the U.S. They hate our freedoms. They hate everything about us. And if that doesn't wash and people say, you know, I don't believe that, then it's because everybody's anti-Semite and they hate the Jews. And that's why.
Yeah.
And it's just difficult to talk to anybody about it here. And you have the Christian churches, the 501c3 government churches in the United States. You know, they have convinced all these pastors through, you know, basically blackmail and extortion, you know, that they'll lose their tax-free. They'll lose all their big buildings. They'll lose their big businesses if they don't toe the line. And the line is that, oh, well, whatever Israel does is fine, because it's God's will.
Yeah, well, that's the way they've got it worked out. What they do is, like, they'll arrive at a Palestinian house at night, and they just dig an 8-meter trench around the whole house, around the whole complex. Then the soldiers come in and they wake up all the people and they issue them out of the house, and that's it. It's got a moat around it. You can't get back in. So that's it. And you're gone now. You don't live here anymore. It's that simple.
Wow.
They just do it in the middle of the night. They just eject you from your house and they take it over. Now we're reclaiming this land. You know, you don't matter because you're only Palestinian. So that's what we're seeing here. So it is causing the implosion of the whole state of Israel. It can't help but implode.
Now, I don't know if you have any direct knowledge of this or you just have an opinion, but I'd like to hear it. What do you feel or know that some Israelis, I mean, what do the Israeli people think of the situation? I mean, you know, because they live there too, and I'm sure they're being fed some propaganda also, but, you know, when you're right there, it's hard to tell me something that I'm looking at and you're telling me something different, that I'm going to believe you and not what I see. So, I mean, these Israelis there, they know what they're doing. They know what's going on. I mean, how are they, how are they living with themselves? I mean, how do they do this?
Well, I mean, a lot of them, there's huge movements in Israel that support the Palestinians and don't like Zionism and don't appreciate Zionism. They believe that Zionism will bring about the destruction of Israel, and Zionism is not Judaism, and that it's destructive to Judaism. There's a lot of people who believe that. See, the people who are doing all of this are Zionists. I mean, they may be Jews, but they're Zionists, and not all Zionists are Jews. You know, so there are huge, huge sections that don't like it, but there are huge sections that participate. I mean, some of the soldiers and some of the things that the soldiers do to the Palestinian people, it's absolutely shocking. But again, they're trained to think this way. They're trained to believe that Palestinians are subhuman, they're less than human, and that showing sympathy to these people is basically sinning against God. I mean, they have this kind of drummed into them by the rabbis, so they're kind of brainwashed, you know. But again, there's a lot of people though that do support. There are huge movements and a lot of Jewish people and a lot of Israeli people who are very, very sympathetic to the Israeli situation. So it's kind of a mixed bag, you know.
Well, and whether you're sympathetic or not, I mean, even as a Zionist, you should have some sort of self-preservation and realize that, you know, this course will destroy us all.
Well, you know, Zionism is a strange way of thinking anyway. So, I mean, I suppose if you're a hardcore Zionist, you probably don't think that rationally. I mean, it's all about the creation of Israel and what's right to strengthen Israel. And I always talk about the Samson option and everything as well. See, Israel's managed to basically turn itself into an unrecognized superpower. When we hear about superpowers, we don't hear about Israel. No one even knows how many nuclear weapons Israel's got.
Well, that's Israel, because they won't participate in the international, community's monitoring of it.
Yeah, they perceive themselves to be above everybody. And they have said that if their existence is threatened, I mean, they're going to continue to take Palestinian land. They're going to keep going. And the conflict won't be over, they say, until Palestine declares an end to the conflict. And Palestine will only declare an end to the conflict once we've eliminated Palestine. That's what basically, I mean, they're continuing to do what they do, like by stealing this land and building these 3,000 units. I mean, they're just continuing to dispossess these people. So basically they're saying, we're going to continue to dispossess you and you have to just handle it because you're Palestinians. You don't have a country. You don't matter. And if you complain about it, then you're not declaring an end to the conflict and we're still at war. That's basically what they're saying, you know.
No, that's not going to end well. I can tell this is not going to end well, but we are at the end of the hour, Max. I want to thank you for being on. Very informative. I'm glad I had you on. Maybe you come on again someday.
Be happy to come on, Frank.
All right. We've got that time difference in Australia, but by the way, what time is it over there?
It's 4 p.m. in the afternoon here.
Oh, middle of the day. Wow, I'm about to call it a day.
Yeah, it's 4 p.m. tomorrow. I'm in the future, brother.
Oh, see? You know, on Mondays I have somebody from the future, too, over in New York. Anyway, Max, thanks for being on. We gotta go. And don't forget to listen to Max's show on Fridays, Surviving the Matrix. And, folks, I told you I'd give you the number, 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Get your gold and silver from Melody. Anyway, I'll see you tomorrow, and thanks for listening, folks. We got stuff coming up. Don't go anywhere.
I'm just a simple man trying to be made.